Setlist in association with 7 Digital.
This week, COVID-19 lockdown and Lizzo. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me, but not actually with me, is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we're going to be taking a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last 7 days. A week when I saw a bird out of a window. Chris, anything?
I have discovered this week just how much noise the city airport flight path makes over Leytonstone.
Right.
It's been so much more peaceful this week. Now there are no planes in the sky. So that has been my big discovery of the week. I haven't seen any birds in the sky, but I haven't seen any planes in the sky either.
Well, I don't have any planes going over, not low enough to hear, but it has been very quiet. Very quiet indeed, because since last week's episode, the UK has gone into full lockdown.
Proper lockdown.
So whereas last week we were recording in separate locations due to firm advice from the government, we now very much have to. So glad we got all this set up.
Yeah, so last week it was implied lockdown, and or maybe even in third lockdown on our part, one or the other, whereas now we're in proper full-on lockdown. So, yeah, it is quite lucky that we have everything already properly set up. Well, actually, last week you had to borrow a cable, didn't you? But you've now even got your own cable.
I have got my own cable, but I have not actually swapped them over yet because obviously I can't go and give this cable back. So why bother?
Yes, that's not on the list of essential activity, is it? Nowhere on the government's list of essential tasks that can be performed out of your house does it say return sound cables that you borrowed last week to record your podcast. I'm saying this, I haven't read that list. Maybe it is on there, but I'm going to assume that it's not.
I don't think so. I mean, basically, it's essential shopping and going out once a day to exercise.
I did go out and buy some wine gums, but not just wine gums. They were one of the items I purchased while buying other food stuff. But I'm not sure. I must admit, I don't know, maybe I'm putting myself in legal problems here, because wine gums probably aren't essential items, are they?
No, but I think if the shop was open, you're fine. I mean, there's been a bit confused about what shops are essential and what aren't. By the end of the week, the government had announced that off licences are essential and can stay open, but it's quite confusing. I was quite pleased to discover it's not just here that things are confusing. I think particularly Australia, their list of what places of business are essential has also been quite confusing. The Prime Minister apparently put out a statement this week saying that hairdressers are essential, but appointments shouldn't last for more than 30 minutes.
I have to say, I wish I had had my hair cut before all this started, because I didn't, and now I could really do with a haircut.
Well, lots of people on social media are shaving their heads, aren't they? I mean, I shave my head anyway, so that's not a novel thing.
So you have it already sorted. Maybe I'll get a pair. I'm sorry, that's true, isn't it? I could get a pair of scissors out. I've often wondered this. I'll get a pair of scissors out and cut my own hair on the basis, if it's a disaster, no one will see it, except that's not going to work because I've been running an awful lot of webinars since we went into lockdown, and I think there's going to be a whole load more webinars happening through CMU Insights over the coming weeks, and I do, for part of that, appear on screen. So, and I do actually now
Wear a hat.
I could wear a hat. when I did, it was in Jamaica. That time I went out to Jamaica to do some music business copyright training in Jamaica, they gave me a big package at the end, and that included a Jamaica baseball cap. And I am so not a baseball cap sort of person, but I do still have it somewhere in my cupboard. So maybe I'll start wearing my bright yellow Jamaica baseball cap for all my webinars. And the people tuning in will be like, oh my God, lockdown sent him crazy. He's wearing a bright yellow baseball cap for this training. But actually, you as podcast listeners will know that the only reason I'm doing that is to hide the terrible haircut that I gave myself while on lockdown.
Well, that's something to look forward to.
It is. You'll all now have to sign up to the webinars to see quite what happens, because this is not a video podcast. We have no intention of making this a video podcast. So in order to see what happens, you'll have to sign up to one of our webinars.
But that's not what we're here to talk about this week.
Well, it kind of is, in that we are going to spend, I would predict, 75% of this podcast talking about COVID-19 lockdown and its impact on the music industry.
Yes, okay, but I do think it's important to stick to the format of this show regardless. So I'm still going to say that line that we say every week. But anyway, this week, we're going to be returning to the ongoing legal battle over who exactly was involved in the writing of Lizzo's Truth Hurts. But first, COVID-19, still a thing. We're all stuck indoors in an effort to stop the health system being overloaded, which means the live music industry is still shut down, record shops are now shut, and as time goes on, more and more elements of the music industry are going to become affected by this pandemic.
Yes, so whereas in recent weeks we had got used to an ever-increasing number of shows and tours and festivals and conferences being cancelled, although there were another couple of big ones that confirmed they weren't going to happen in 2020 this week, so both the Isle of Wight Festival and Download, both due to take place, is it the same weekend in June?
Yes.
And so they both confirmed this week that they are now not happening for 2020, but it has sort of got to the point where, other than those big UK festivals, we've kind of stopped reporting on shows getting cancelled because it's sort of, well, any show happening in the next 2 to 3 months, it's kind of a given, isn't it? I guess it will become news again when August events start being cancelled, because the question remains, how long is this going to last for?
Yeah, because there was that big statement that the members of the European Festivals trade body, Europe, put out last week, in which they all said they stand together and they're still expecting all of their festivals to go ahead this summer, although they are monitoring the situation. But they were very kind of, it was a very firm statement, like, we're not cancelling, we're still going ahead at the moment, we'll see what happens.
But while we've sort of, except for those big ones, stopped reporting on shows and tours and festivals being cancelled because it's kind of now become a given, I suppose the interesting thing that started happening this week is that release dates started getting pushed back. And there was that one day with the CMU Daily where we have our news in brief section, the CMU one-liners, and pretty much every one of the little one-liner statements was, this album's being pushed back, this EP's not now coming out, this is now coming out in September. So we are now starting to see an impact, possibly not financially, but certainly in terms of new music being available. We're seeing an impact on the recording side as well as on the live side.
Yes, and there were various reasons why artists were pushing back release dates. I mean, Lady Gaga was the big one. She said she just didn't feel like it was the right time to be putting out new music. There was Heinz, who are a Spanish band, who said that some of them were caring for sick family and they didn't really want to stop to promote an album right now. And then there were the Pretenders, who said that with record shops closing and international restrictions on transport, it wasn't really possible to get the physical media out there into the world, so they were postponing their new album release too. So as I say, there's a wide variety of different reasons for pushing back releases. There was one that came forward due to coronavirus, and that was Sufjan Stevens' new album, which he brought forward by a few days so that the record could get into shops and they could sell it and make some money before lockdown. I mean, that lockdown came probably a bit quicker than he was expecting, but still, in that case, it was a case of bringing a release forward and making sure that the record was out there.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that part of me, I mean, obviously, that list of reasons you gave for pushing back releases, those are all good reasons, but, you know, part of you feels, with the live industry on shutdown, really, everybody should be trying to keep the recording side going and getting those records out there. But it's interesting, yesterday, as I record this, we did one of our training courses with the MMF Accelerator Programme, with lots of managers, and it was really interesting to be talking to them about the impact all of this is having on them and their artists. We also had Brian Message from ATC take part in that. It was interesting hearing what he was saying, and I sort of raised this issue of, is there an argument that, although obviously for some artists there'll be very specific reasons why releases have to be put back, obviously some artists will have had a whole load of live activity around the release, and as the live activity's gone back, they might feel the album wants to go back. But is there an element of, we should be encouraging artists where possible to keep those releases coming, because with live and shutdown, we could keep the other side of the business refreshed with lots of new content. But I mean, one of the managers did point out, and it's a very, very fair, legitimate point, which is, you know, if you're an artist and you've spent the last 2 years of your life working on an album and you're really happy with the results and you're really excited about getting this album that you've put all of your energy in over 2 years out, the thought of then having to put it out with a stripped back marketing campaign and not be able to enter the live activity, that would be a major disappointment. So I can see where a sort of the harsh business side of me is, we need to keep new releases coming, we need to keep that side of the business going. I totally understand there's a whole plethora of reasons why artists don't want to do that. I suppose the interesting thing is, and I kind of alluded to this just now when I said that it's not necessarily going to have a financial impact, because had this happened 10 years ago during the iTunes boom, or 20 years ago, sort of during the end of the CD era, back then, if lots of artists started to put releases on hold, that would have an immediate massive financial impact on the record industry. So at the exact time the live industry is in crisis because all the venues have shut down and the festivals are being cancelled, the labels would be screwed up because there would be no records to sell and there would be no releases and therefore no income. Whereas, of course, we're now in this era where providing people continue to pay to subscribe to Spotify and Apple and Amazon, etc., providing people don't stop cancelling their subscriptions, the same amount of money is coming in. Now, fewer new releases will have an impact on how that money then gets shared out between all of the different stakeholders in the music industry, but actually the same amount of money is going to be coming in every month. So in some ways, the streaming era, the record industry is much more shielded from any impact of all of this. Although I suppose there have been lots of articles, haven't there, about everyone expected the figures to go up on the streaming services, the music streaming services, as a result of lockdown. And actually, we've seen the opposite happen, which I think is partly because a lot of people listen to music on streaming services on their commute and people aren't commuting. I think video streaming is going to definitely go up because some people, when they're at home, whereas if they're out and about, they might be listening to music, they're now at home watching Netflix or Amazon Prime or YouTube or whatever. Some people have said maybe at times like this, people are more likely to turn on the radio because you want a human being to connect with. But I suppose whether or not streaming usage, as in the number of tracks being streamed, whether it goes up or, as actually happened, has gone down, commercially that makes no difference because the same amount of money is coming in. So it's only going to have an impact commercially if either more people start signing up for premium subscriptions because they're on lockdown. I don't think that's likely to happen. Or people start unsubscribing from premium, I guess probably because everyone's got the financial worries at the moment. But I don't think that's necessarily going to happen in a major way. The one way it could have a commercial impact on the recording side, I guess, is we probably will see a slowdown of new subscribers, paying subscribers to services like Spotify. And obviously all that growth in the record industry actually has nothing to do with what new releases are out. It's all about how many people are signing up to a paid-for streaming service for the first time. And I think we may well see those sign-ups slowing down as a result of everything that's happening. But anyway, after having several weeks of everything being about live shows being cancelled, it was interesting this week that we started to see the impact on the new releases on the recording side.
Yes, it's probably worth mentioning the one big release that has come out, which is Dua Lipa's new album. That was brought forward as well, although not due to the coronavirus, but because it leaked. And therefore, I mean, in those circumstances, generally you want to get the album out as quickly as possible so that people are streaming it on legitimate services rather than getting it from illegal sources. And I think, I mean, the statement she put out, she did a video statement on this as well, where she was, you know, quite emotional and said she was in two minds about whether or not this was the time to release the album. But I think her hand had kind of been forced by the leak. But it could have been that actually, based on exactly what you said, the kind of the inability to properly promote this record and tour it at the moment would have meant that she would have pushed it back had it not leaked. But in fact, it did actually work out quite well. There was such a positive response to that record coming out on Friday that I think it certainly cemented her as the star of the lockdown.
Yeah, and obviously with everybody being at home, everyone looking for home entertainment, having, you know, refreshed, new, exciting content available is a good thing. Obviously, the other thing that has continued over the last week is the number of people doing live streaming or other quirky stuff on the various platforms, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, etc.
Yeah, I was watching a music festival on Instagram last night because music festivals are just artists in their own homes playing acoustically over Instagram now.
So, you know, in the short term, that's kind of fun, isn't it? In the short term, it's interesting seeing how people are adapting. One of the managers on the training course I mentioned yesterday was talking about how they are going ahead with one of their releases, but they're completely redoing the video. So it's all now being shot in the artist's home and stuff like that. So there is some really interesting stuff going on out there. I suppose with our journalistic hats on, we're interested in the business side. An awful lot of the live streaming, the quirky homemade videos that are going online to date have been about engaging the fans, keeping the conversation going, just doing stuff to keep people amused while they're locked in their houses. The other interesting thing is, and this will bring us on to what we're going to talk about next, given that so many musicians and artists and people who work with musicians and artists, because of the live shutdown and with the studios and the shops now also being shut down, and even more so if we get more and more releases being pushed back, so there's less marketing and PR work being done, is the financial element of all of this. And so it has been interesting seeing some people experimenting with how you might be able to turn this live streaming, this online extra activity that is now happening into generating revenue, and whether or not that's by putting the content behind a paywall, or more often it's by having some sort of donation or Patreon style thing going on and stuff like that. But I suppose that does bring us to the big ongoing talking point in the music community over the last week, is the impact that the shutdown of live entertainment and other aspects of the music industry is having on the music community, on artists, on musicians, on songwriters, and everybody who works with them, and efforts by the industry, but more importantly by government, to help provide support for those people. And obviously on last week's set list, the big focus of the conversation we were having was how here in the UK, the early measures that were announced by government were more focused on businesses and those in formal employment, which is a big problem for the music industry, where there are so many people who are self-employed, work on a freelance basis. So we were waiting for the government to announce some measures to help the self-employed. And I suppose, you know, in that sense, that has been the big development in the last 7 days here in the UK, in that on Thursday night, we finally got that announcement.
Yeah, I think when we recorded the last episode, we were expecting this announcement to come a lot quicker than it did, although the government has been very keen to stress how very, very complicated sorting out money for freelancers is. But basically, it's going to match what had already been offered to people in traditional employment, which was 80% of monthly earnings up to £2,500 a month. Freelancers will get their average monthly earnings based on their last 3 years of tax returns, also up to £2,500 a month. There are certain issues with this, though. For example, if you're very recently self-employed, you may not be eligible for any money under this scheme. If you're a woman who's been on maternity leave, or indeed a father who's been on paternity leave at some point in the last 3 years, then that would affect your average earnings over that time, and therefore you're going to get less money, even though actually your monthly income when you are working is higher. And the other big problem is that no one's going to get any money until June. So obviously, I mean, people who had their earnings disappear overnight a month ago are now going to have to wait till June to get any money, and they've got bills to pay right now.
Yeah, that is kind of assuming that these people have either savings they can dip into, or an overdraft they can dip into, or a credit card that they can use. And actually, particularly in the music community, there are a lot of people where that is not the case. And the idea of, yes, it's great that this measure has been put in place, and for a significant portion, not all, for some of the reasons you've just said, also some other reasons as well, not everybody who is freelance in the music industry will be helped by this, but I think a significant number will. Except the idea of having to wait till June until a penny comes through is a potentially big problem, and various trade groups for the music industry have welcomed these measures, thanked the government for responding to the concerns of the music industry and elsewhere about the self-employed, but have pointed out that really people need to be getting that money a lot sooner, or at the very least there needs to be some systems in place where banks are encouraged to provide overdrafts, knowing that there is money coming in down the line from the government. It has to be said that there is still one group of people who will not be helped by this, and probably not helped by the previous measures either, which is when you are freelance or self-employed here in the UK, there's various different ways that you can set things up. So the easiest way is you simply say, okay, I am now what we call the sole trader. So I am a company. Me and the company are the same thing. I tell HMRC, the tax people, I'm now a sole trader. So I will now do an annual tax return, and I'll pay tax on my profit. So all the money that comes in, I then remove any costs that were business costs, and I declare what's left, and that's what I pay tax on. Those are sole traders, and those are the people that this scheme is for. So if you are that person, providing you don't have the issues that you're very recently self-employed, or that issue, yes, maybe you took maternity or paternity leave, which had an impact on your income over the last 3 years, and that has an impact then on what you're able to claim now. But those complications aside, the people who are truly sole traders will benefit. But another way that you can set yourself up as self-employed is you set up a limited company. So we then have a standalone legal entity that is actually the business, and then that company pays you. And either it pays you a salary through the PAYE system, but actually what quite a lot of people do is, because actually it's more tax efficient to do it this way, is you just take a dividend out of the company. So the money goes into the company pays all its bills, and then at the end of each quarter or each year of the money that is left, so the company's profit, you then bring that out as a shareholder in that company and pay yourself a dividend. And the people who have set up their businesses the latter way sort of fall between the cracks, because they're not self-employed in the true definition of the word, so they're not going to apply for the sole trader scheme, but probably the scheme that benefits businesses and the employed possibly doesn't apply. So yeah, there are still some gaps, and that will impact some people, whether they are artists or musicians, or they are freelance promoters, or they work on live music, or they are PR people or managers or agents. So yeah, whenever one of these schemes is announced here in the UK, and the exact same thing applies all over the world, because obviously in every country, different packages are being announced by government to help support different groups of people impacted by the COVID-19 shutdown. When any set of measures is announced, all the sort of trade organisations representing each sector, so all the trade organisations in the music industry, they need to sit down, look at the measures and say, okay, that's great. This group of people now have some support. This is how we can help them access that support. But go through the nitty-gritty. The devil is always in the detail. It turns out there's actually still a group of people, a significant group of people, who are not being helped by any of these schemes. And therefore, we need to keep putting pressure on government to deal with that. And things are moving so fast. I mean, you're right that we expected the announcement on the self-employed to come out probably the first half of last week rather than towards the end of last week. And therefore, it seemed it was quite a long wait. Although, I mean, to be fair, it was what? 4 days between us recording that podcast and the announcement coming out. It's just in the world we're currently in. Things are happening so fast that having to wait 48 hours for something does feel like a really long time. And it can be quite hard to keep up with all of the announcements. So obviously we're reporting on this from a music industry's perspective, and there's all the various government announcements here in the UK, let alone all of the other schemes that have been announced in other countries, some of whom are doing more for the creative sector, some of whom are doing less. And of course, we should quickly acknowledge, particularly for anybody listening who is still looking for support within the music community, that in addition to the government initiatives, there are also a whole string of music industry initiatives aiming to support people affected by this. A lot of them skew towards musicians and artists and songwriters and producers, although there are some wider schemes as well. So, I mean, the ones to mention here in the UK, Help Musicians has set up a scheme, PRS has set up a scheme, the Musicians Union has set up a scheme. Also, Spotify is putting some money in to both Help Musicians and then another scheme from the PRS Foundation rather than PRS itself. So there are now a number of schemes out there. It can be hard to keep up with with what they're all doing and what they're offering. But
we will put links in the show notes, though.
We will indeed. And I suppose the thing to say about that is, I mean, those schemes, obviously, even the ones which on face value seem to have quite a significant chunk of money available, nevertheless, for each individual person, we're not talking about major chunks of money. That is coming, rightly so, from the government schemes. But I suppose for those people whom perhaps they do now qualify for this self-employed initiative here in the UK, that's great. They're going to have a little bit of support, but they literally need 200 quid today. Otherwise, they're going to be in real trouble. So they cannot wait for June for that money. That's the sort of thing that these schemes really are for. So you can get a relatively small amount of money, but super fast, just to get you through the next few days, the next few weeks, until whichever government scheme is relevant to you is up and working and you can get that money in your bank account.
There have been various other proposals for how to financially support musicians at this time, besides those emergency grants that you mentioned there. Some, it has to be said, have been a bit more realistic than others. One interesting idea was put forward by the Ivers Academy, which was for unallocated streaming royalties, otherwise known as black box money, to be set aside for those in the music community facing hardship amid the COVID-19 shutdown, rather than as it is currently being paid out to songwriters and publishers based on market share.
Yeah, so this is the money that comes out of Spotify and Apple, etc., on the song side, not the recording side, that should be going to whichever songwriters and publishers control the songs that have been streamed. That's what should be happening to that money. And, you know, whereas when music gets played in a pub or a bar or cafe, traditionally we have accepted that it's impossible for us to know exactly what music is used in every pub, club, bar, cafe across the world. So when money comes in from those places through the collective licensing system, it's inevitable that we're not going to have completely accurate distribution of that money, and therefore the industry has to come up with some way of how you share that money out. No one ever likes the system, but probably there is no perfect system. But in theory, on the streaming side, we shouldn't have this problem, because, you know, the Spotify can tell us precisely what recordings and therefore what songs were streamed in any one month, and therefore we should be able to work out when the money comes in from streaming services how we share it out. But on the song side, there are all sorts of issues and complexities, and last year we produced for the Music Managers Forum here in the UK the Song Royalties Guide, which the MMF launched at The Great Escape last year. And if you're interested in why there is this chunk of money, unallocated streaming royalties on the song side, that guide explains it all in some detail. But there are data issues. The way songs are licensed to streaming services is very complex. There's the issue that Spotify doesn't actually know what songs are being streamed. It only knows what recordings are being streamed. And as a result of that, there is a chunk of money every month, every quarter, every year on the song side coming from the streaming services that nobody knows what to do with. And in the main, that then gets shared out across the industry according to some metric, usually some sort of market share metric. And that is quite controversial already, because there is an argument that generally, whenever money in the music industry gets shared out by market share, a disproportionate amount will go to the superstars and to the big rights owners. And generally, it's the grassroots artists and the small rights owners who lose out. Even though with this particular stack of unallocated cash, the superstars and the big publishers should have the systems in place to accurately claim all the money they are due. And so the chances are that the money that isn't allocated is for the people who don't really understand how the system works, who screwed up their data registrations, etc. So this has been a conversation for a while now within the songwriter community and the management community. That's one of the big things the Song Royalties Guide was about last year. So yes, this quite bombastic proposal from the Ivors Academy here in the UK representing the songwriters was, what if we say that we take that money and rather than distributing it by market share, for a period of time, we put it in a fund that is specifically there to support songwriters and other music makers during this time, because it could be a significant amount of money. Now, we don't actually know quite how much money goes unallocated on the song side, but it seems that it's probably 20 to 30% of the money. Some people off the record actually reckon it's quite a bit higher than that. But I mean, let's say 20%. Well, 20% of all the money coming in on the song side for streaming is a lot of money. So an interesting proposal from the Ivors Academy. I mean, I suspect that there will be, albeit behind the scenes, quite a lot of pushback from various quarters to that proposal. Although the Music Managers Forum put out a statement on Friday here in the UK supporting that and saying that they felt that was a good proposal. The OMF also had its own proposal, which is that the major record companies and the major publishers could offer the artists and songwriters on their roster what they are calling a recoupment holiday. So basically what that is about is when artists and songwriters sign to labels and publishers, usually they get a cash advance as part of that deal, and then that advance is recoupable. What that basically means is, as soon as the artist's recordings and songs start making money, the label and publisher takes back the advance out of their royalties, so pays no more money over to the artists and songwriters until they've recouped the advance. On the label side, there may be other costs that the label incurs that are also recoupable, so sometimes advertising spend or music video production costs or, you know, tour support may be recoupable. So what that means is, for quite a lot of artists and songwriters, although their music is generating money, actually they're not getting new cash in their bank account because that cash is being used by the label or publisher to recoup past expenditure. And so the proposal here is, well, what if we just said for a short period of time that recoupment goes on hold? And so if there are royalties due to artists and songwriters on the streaming side, for example, rather than using that to pay off unrecouped advances and other costs, we actually hand that over. So that is money going into the bank accounts of artists and songwriters. Superstars have almost certainly recouped. So this isn't about helping superstars who probably don't need the help. It's about helping the more sort of middle-level artists who are generating money through their streams but aren't seeing that money because it's recouping past expenditure. So maybe this recoupment holiday will be a way of getting them some quick cash. Obviously, once this period is over, then the label or publisher would be able to continue taking future income to pay off the advances and other costs. So anyway, two interesting proposals that came up this week as to how the big music companies and the collecting societies and the copyright hubs could offer short-term support to artists and songwriters beyond the small speedy grants that are now being offered by these various funds, and of course any support that the government is giving here in the UK or governments elsewhere in the world are providing through the schemes like the Sole Trader scheme that was announced this week.
Yeah, so various initiatives and proposals for how musicians can be supported financially through this very difficult period when people are going to be struggling financially and very quickly struggling financially. If you want further advice and information on various aspects of what you can be doing during this outbreak as a musician, both in terms of safety and looking after your mental health and financially, you can go to coronamusicians.info. And it's also worth mentioning that an organisation called Music Industry Therapists and Coaches have put out a free ebook to help musicians and people in the music industry cope during the pandemic and lockdown, offering a variety of different bits of advice from different people, from coping with anxiety to nutritional advice to how best to set yourself up for working at home. Everyone who works for that organisation, as the name suggests, has previously worked in the music industry before they changed to therapy or being a coach in some way. So that's definitely worth checking out. We will put links to that and everything we've mentioned here in the show notes so that you can find out where to go quickly for all of that stuff. And finally this week, because we're trying really hard during all this to make sure we have one story a week that is not related to COVID-19. And thankfully, lawyers seem to be completely unaffected by this. So they are still apparently operating at full capacity, which means we're back with the Lizzo Truth Hurts case once again.
Yes, and this was a great legal filing that we saw this week in relation to this case, this time from the Lizzo side. So this is the ongoing dispute over the ownership in the copyright in Lizzo's track Truth Hurts. So we talked about this about 3 weeks ago on Set List before.
Yes, it was the top story when we spoke about coronavirus for the first time. It beat coronavirus that time. And as you said, how times have changed.
In that week, it seemed like it was the most important thing happening in music, because it's an interesting case, but also it's a great case because both sides are putting in quite forthright legal filings. So as a very, very quick recap, if you're interested in the specifics, do go back and listen to that edition in the archive. But basically, Lizzo's track Truth Hurts, there are these three guys who claim that a key lyric in that track also appeared in an earlier song, a demo song that was never released, that they were involved in creating, or so they allege. And so the basic allegation is that the key lyric in the song Truth Hurts was also in this earlier work. They were involved in creating that element of that song. So therefore, because of that, they should have a stake in the copyright in Truth Hurts, which was a late in the day hit. Although it was released in 2017, it was only last year, as Lizzo's fame started to increase and thanks to a sync on a Netflix show and a little bit of TikTok stuff going on, that track suddenly became a hit. And so these three guys, 3 years later, are saying because they were involved in the creation of this lyric in this earlier song that then got used in Truth Hurts, they should have a share in the copyright of Truth Hurts, and they should be sharing in all the money that that track is now creating.
Yes, so there's Justin and Jeremiah Raisin, who owned the studio where that demo was recorded, and also another producer and songwriter called Justin Eves Rothman, who also claims to have been involved in that earlier demo track. So it contained the line, "I did a DNA test, turns out I'm 100% that bitch," which actually came from a meme that they found on social media, and they liked it. They put it in the song, and it's that line that then ended up in Truth Hurts. And so the dispute is basically over that line and whether the fact that it had been transferred from one song to another means that the Raisins and Rothman should be cut into the royalties from Truth Hurts.
So this all kicked off last year as Truth Hurts became a hit. So initially, the Raisin brothers went onto social media and basically made their claim that they should have a stake in Truth Hurts because it took the lyric from this earlier song that they were involved in, recorded in their studio. After they'd gone public on social media, Lizzo then went legal. So she filed the initial legal filing, and the original lawsuit basically said, this is all a nonsense. Yes, she conceded, this earlier song did contain that key lyric. Yes, that song had been recorded in the Raisin Brothers studio, but she said that they themselves, nor this other guy, Eves Rothman, they were not involved in deciding to turn that meme into a lyric. They were not involved in how that lyric was then sung. It happened in their studio, but that is it. So therefore, they had no involvement in the creation of that lyric, which means they definitely don't have any claim to the copyright in Truth Hurts. The lawsuit also said, we've already talked about all of this. We had this conversation previously, and the Raisin Brothers confirmed in writing and on a phone call with Lizzo herself that they were not going to make a claim to the copyright in Truth Hurts, and they only made that claim once it had topped the Billboard Hot 100, is what Lizzo said in her lawsuit last year.
Yeah, and as we discussed in that previous edition of the podcast where this came up before, the Raisins' version of this story was very different. They described in detail the creative process in this track and talked about how they were involved in adding that lyric to Healthy and said that they'd never actually back down on their claim to a copyright in Truth Hurts as a result. They did talk about a phone call with Lizzo that's come up a number of times on both sides, but they suggested that there was some intimidation on Lizzo's part in trying to get them to back down on that claim. So yeah, two very different sides to this story.
So last week, Lizzo's side made another legal filing in this case, responding to the Raisin Brothers filings. So lots of back and forth going on in this case. And in her legal filing, she basically says, I disagree with pretty much everything the Raisin Brothers have said, but there's one specific thing that I would like the court to rule on straight away, which is their claim of ownership in Truth Hurts, which obviously is at the centre of the case. That's what this the dispute really is about. And she's basically asking for the judge to dismiss outright from the start their specific claim to a share in the Truth Hurts copyright.
Their opportunistic and legally bankrupt claim, she said in her filing.
Yes, it was another forthright filing from the Lizzo side, ensuring that despite everything else that's happening in the world, this case remains very entertaining. Elsewhere in the new legal filing, she said that the Raisin Brothers' own lawsuit makes abundantly clear what Lizzo has maintained from the start, that neither Justin Raisin nor Jeremiah Raisin nor Yves Rothman had any involvement in the creation of Truth Hurts. In this circumstance, black letter law, don't know what that means, but black letter law is clear. The defendants cannot co-own or seek unjustified credit as co-authors of Truth Hurts, a work they did not create. And I suppose the core element of this dispute remains what happened in the Raisin Brothers studio the day that lyric was conceived and the way that lyric is sung was conceived. Lizzo is saying,
I think the key is that none of them conceived the lyric. Someone else wrote the lyric.
Yes, sir.
They found it. So it does seem like a weird thing to be having such a big battle over. It's established that someone else wrote that lyric. The person who wrote that lyric has been cut into the song's royalties.
Yes, so you're right. The question is, who decided to take an social media meme and turn it into a lyric? And then there is a discussion about the specific way that Lizzo chose to sing it. But anyway, the core dispute remains. Were the Raisins and Rothman involved in that process or not? Lizzo maintains that they were not, and is basically saying because they have no claim to the creation of that very specific lyric, they can't therefore claim any copyright in Truth Hurts just because they collaborated on an earlier work that happens to share one line in common.
So Lizzo's filing goes on, defendants are wrong that they can co-own Truth Hurts because they allegedly co-own the unreleased demo and Truth Hurts contains the same DNA test line and melody as contained in that unreleased work. It then says, a party's alleged joint authorship of a first work does not make that party a joint author of a second work that uses material from the first.
Yeah, and then they cite a whole load of legal precedent that they reckon backs up their argument. Interestingly, that last quote that you just gave there is the line, a party's alleged joint authorship of the first work. So Lizzo is even disputing that they have a stake in the original song that lyric was in, let alone in Truth Hurts. But basically what she's saying is, although I even have a beef over that unreleased work that nobody cares about, what I want the judge to rule on as a matter of urgency is the ownership of Truth Hurts and to dismiss the Raisin Brothers' claim on that. As for the dispute over what conversations previously took place and whether or not the Raisins had, prior to Truth Hurts becoming a hit, said that they were not making a copyright claim, the new legal papers that were filed last week say that the two producers, acting through their sophisticated music representatives, expressively withdrew their claims in multiple writings. Defendants have literally nothing to say about this overwhelming written evidence, except for a puzzling denial of knowledge or information sufficient to form a belief regarding this clear conduct. So as we say, tough talking in this new legal filing from the Lizzo side.
So we wait to see if the judge accepts Lizzo's request for a dismissal and how the Raisins respond to this legal filing, whether they come back in a similar bombastic fashion.
Let's hope so. You might be thinking that lawyers continuing to send out filings like this should not appear on a list of essential activity during the COVID-19 lockdown, but we're all in need of some good entertainment. So I think lots of angry legal filings as this Truth Hurts dispute continues to go through the motions, exactly what we need at the moment. So I'm supporting having that particular legal activity continuing definitely justified during this time.
But that's all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. You can subscribe to receive episodes automatically every week from us. You can email us with any questions or comments, setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by me, Andy Malt, and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.
Setlist is an Unlimited production.